Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Today I'm joined by a fascinating woman, Roxana Shirazi. She was born in Iran right before the Shah lost power, when women were stripped of all their rights. Her family sent her to live in England in the early 80s, where she found her love of rock and roll and her hunger for the men behind the music. With personal conquests as famous as Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses to the entirety of Buck Cherry, she left her mark on the men of rock and roll, all the while getting her master's degree in gender studies at Bath University. But which side is the real Roxana? The education-oriented bookworm or the sexually charged woman who brings rock stars to their knees? Let's find out. Roxana, welcome. So my first question is the title of your book, which is kind of fascinating, The Last Living Slut, Born in Iran, Bred Backstage. Tell me about your childhood. Tell me why that is the title of your book.
Well, I didn't choose that title.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
My title for my book was Sex, Iran, Rock and Roll.
Okay.
In all honesty. And my editors wanted to give it a different title. They weren't happy with Sex, Iran, Rock and Roll. I think they felt that it sounded like an academic book. So they said, we need something that sells. We need something that's controversial. It's a catchy title. Sensationalist. So they called it that, and I didn't like it. I've never liked it. I've never been a fan of the title.
Well, you know what? I don't blame you, because I'm sure that you're not the last living person in Iran to have sexual exploits. So why don't you jump?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Gad.
No, I'm just saying it was for me, first of all, I was like, why am I the last living?
Exactly.
And, and I was like, well, if anybody starts asking me why I named this, I'm going to have to say that it wasn't me, because I have to be truthful. I don't like lying about anything, so especially if it's my life story, if it's my book. So, but then again, I wrote an introduction about the word slut. I wanted to own the word, just like queer, and kind of say why it's a negative. Slut means especially a female who has lots of sexual partners. Why is it bad? Why does it make you a bad human being?
If it did, half of Manhattan would be bad human beings.
That's true.
And God, we don't want to say that. I am fascinated about your childhood in Tehran. You were born under the Shah. Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell us about that. I want you to tell me about members of your family, including your mom, who was involved in anti-Shah activity and constantly being arrested, harassed. And from my understanding, being arrested means being interrogated and possibly being tortured. What was it like growing up in that political climate?
Well, first of all, I had a beautiful and magical childhood. I really did, because Iran has a beautiful nature. It's got rich history and culture, and which has put special emphasis on family gatherings, family parties, which is all very colorful, with a banquet of foods full of warmth and love. So for me, that was my daily life. But I was also in the midst of political chaos, because my family were left-wing activists, and I lived in a home where there was constant people who had escaped from prison, who were poets and writers or teachers who had been imprisoned for their thoughts and because they didn't, agree with the government and because it was a dictatorship. So it was a very rich childhood in the sense that I grew up very quickly. I started to read political books when I was five, when I could actually read, and children's books on political things. So I was surrounded by this mixture of nature, beauty, fruit trees, sun, like family, lots of cousins, lots of friends, a lot of love from family, but also seeing prisons all the time, going to visit my uncles in prison with my mother. And I was also in prison myself when I was 6 months old.
6 months old?
Yeah.
Did you steal a bottle?
Sorry?
I said, did you steal a bottle of milk? What did you do, girl?
I went with my mom. She was arrested when she was a teacher of literature at the time, and she just had me. She was 24, and they just burst into my grandmother's house where we lived and took her away. So she had me in her arms, so she took me with her. And obviously, I don't remember because I was so young, but I do remember subsequently, after so many of my uncles who were there, or my mum's cousins, and I used to go and visit all the time in the big prisons and see a lot of things and see their torture marks and their scars and hear about what used to happen to them.
Roxana, after the Shah was gone, according to your book, things actually got worse. Women were stripped of their rights. They were forced to completely cover up. Did you understand what was going on? How did that affect you?
I understood what was going on because I just knew so much by that time about capitalism, about dictatorship. I was like seven, and I knew everything, how the Shah had taken from the poor and made the rich richer and made the poor poorer. I knew exactly what was going on. How it affected me was that I saw this climate of fear on the streets, because what happened was there was a lot of revolutionary guards and jeeps and tanks, and jeeps mainly, armed guards and the morality police who arrested everybody, for women for showing strands of hair, wearing makeup. They would receive a lot of lashes or be executed just for things like showing a bit of hair or wearing makeup or nail polish. And there was this massive, intense climate of fear on the street. And I was old enough to understand that you had to live in fear because you would get arrested if you put one foot wrong. So, it affected me in the sense that I went to school and I was separated from my male cousins, and it was all segregated public spaces, you know, like in everywhere, in libraries, schools, even beaches. It was all segregated. Even at weddings, you have to have men in one room, women in another room.
Did it make you begin to question whether or not the revolution was in fact a good thing, and life under these kind of circumstances were not necessarily better than under the Shah?
I immediately had a sense that it was worse, because just from the way that I would see things on TV, people begging for their lives, leaders of political groups being executed. I would see things on the street, like people screaming at women to cover up, and people being run out of their homes, and people being found in mass graves. I just felt it more and then the war came along soon after, so I saw it constantly around me, soldiers and death, constant death, people dying.
That was the war with Iraq, correct?
Yes.
In your book, you address the fact that not only did a man who happened to be renting a room from your grandmother molest you, but your stepfather physically and verbally abused. Mm-hmm. How did you handle that? And does that have anything, do you think, to do with your sexual rebellion or your sexual coming of age?
Children are sexual. They don't understand. All children are sexual without knowing what sexual is. They're innocent sexual. I'm not a fan of Freud, but psychiatry does say we have the three feelings. We want to eat, we want to go to the bathroom, and we have this urge in our tummy. We don't know what it is, but it is sexual desire without it being emotionally mature. It's just something there. It's nothing. My sexuality as an adult is maybe subconsciously formed by things that happened to me as a child, but I was always a very tactile and sexual child, in the sense that I liked to touch. I would not, but in a really innocent way, very innocent way, not like that. I didn't know what sex was, but it was just, I remember as a child, I used to have sexual fantasies. I didn't know what they were, and touch myself down there without knowing what it was. So I don't, it's kind of like, you know, my being molested by three different men, of course it would have had an effect on me, but maybe it has, but I don't know, subconscious. I'm not aware of it.
You know, it's interesting because what I hear in your voice is that you're still innocent. I mean, I hear just a very innocent, honest, you know, non-protective person. You still have that innocence that so transcends everything that you're saying. I'm very taken back. Roxana, when you moved to England in 84, it appears you had a difficult time transitioning. You mentioned that you were bullied and you really missed your family. Your grandmom passed away. How hard was it to adjust to England? How hard was the adjustment?
It was the worst year of my life so far, even now. It was horrendous. It was hell. It was a living hell. And I don't care if I sound ungrateful or it was absolute and utter hell, because one day I was with friends and family and my mother and being looked after. The next day I had to become an adult, a complete adult who didn't speak English. I was bullied, called very bad, extreme racist names. I lived in poverty. I didn't have any food. It was just horrendous going from one extreme to the other.
Now, is that because the English government, you know, did not, that the English people were not gracious to outsiders? What was the reason for that?
I think it was many different reasons. Once I was without my family, I was 10 and I didn't have my mum and family. My grandmother died shortly after, so I was sent to live with an English family. And I was bullied, racially bullied, every day, constantly, like it was every day, and physically and mentally, verbally abused by the children at the school. I didn't speak the language. I felt like I didn't know how to. This family I was with were kind, but I didn't know. I was Iranian. I didn't know how to be English or the food they ate. I was kind of scared and then wanted my mummy, and I was 10. So it was lots of different factors. And that it was just, I felt like there was nobody I could bond with or attach myself to, and I was really scared as a child.
You came out of that experience, and at 17, you began to strip. You began doing some stripping, and you saved enough money to get away from your stepfather, who doesn't sound like a great chum. And it seems like you experimented with women way before you lost your virginity to men, which I believe was in your early 20s. Was it because women were less threatening, or was there a natural gravitation towards women?
I guess it was just, I don't know. Obviously, I was attracted to guys, boys, when I was a teenager. There was lots of boys I had crushes on, and I liked boys. But I guess I just... I was too afraid to be physically intimate with them for some reason. I hadn't felt I wanted to be in love and, you know, and be in a relationship to lose my virginity. So I hadn't even kissed the boy until I was 24. So, but I did lots of things with girls. I mean, I was really sexual, and I had my first orgasm when I was like 10.
Actually probably had your first orgasm before you were one, because most girls, they position themselves so they rock and actually experience an orgasm. Yeah, I'm sure it was before 10, but you didn't even realize it.
I guess my first ejaculating orgasm.
Okay, there you go.
I was like 10, 11. But no, I never felt like I could. I was too scared to be physically intimate. But yeah, with girls, yeah, I was very, very physically intimate. I don't know why. I have no idea. I think I felt more.
But no, actually, you answered it. The reason why is you're a highly sexual person, obviously a very warm person, likes to connect. Men were too frightening. They were too complicated. And for women, it was kind of simple. It was probably very gentle and very non-threatening. That's what it sounds like.
I guess so. I think I felt more safe with the girls, especially the ones who are my friends. I felt more safe to sort of do stuff with them. But I left it pretty late to lose my virginity.
And then you got involved with rockers, and it seems like the whole world changed. What did rock and roll do to you and for you?
It brought out my the tiger in me. It just really my it was like being bitten by Dracula. You come alive. I came alive. Like it was like the color of my eyes changed, and the blood was rushing around my veins, and I was just this different creature that I was inside me all these years just came out. And I think it was just this hidden energy I had. I'd been to drama school. I'd done a lot of acting in theatre, and I'd always liked to be on stage and stuff. In real life, I was really shy. But when I was on a stage as a performer, I was an extreme extrovert. So this was like an outlet to be like this as a performance in the rock and roll arena and the rock and roll stage. So it brought out the craziest, biggest performer in me.
Now, I'm going to encourage everyone to read your book so they can see when you say crazy what you mean by it. You had at one point did some experimentation with drugs and alcohol, and then it stopped. What was it like to start, and why did it stop?
Because I started saying so late in my life, I hadn't gone out and partied. So when I started it, it went crazy. I did it intensely. So I guess I just was doing everything. I'd never tried hallucinogenics like acid. It just doesn't appeal to me to be out of control. I have to be in control. But I just kind of dabbled in it when I met the first guy who was a rocker, and I dabbled in it with him and stuff. So
Was that Axis Rose?
No, that was it was by accident. It was a drummer of a band called Stereophonics. And he was crazy and wild and a free spirit. So I kind of, I started experimenting with drugs and stuff. And I think, although everybody has a different reaction to drugs. Some people are habitual users. Some people get addicted. Some people have a psychological addiction to them. I think with me, it was just, I didn't get addicted to them. I just used them here and there. But physically, I had a really bad reaction.
What happened to you?
You had a seizure.
Mm-hmm. And did you stop after that seizure?
I stopped for a few months. I was really like freaked out by it because I was with a band, and I woke up like I was with them all night, like I was with the whole band. And then I woke up in a room with a couple of them, and then in the morning, I kind of wanted to leave as a bit of drugs, and then I passed out. I don't remember after that. So I'd had a seizure and I'd bitten my tongue. And I was really ill for a long time after that. I was so ill. It was just like I couldn't get up. I was tired all the time and in a daze. So I stopped for a while after that, but I dabbled very little after that, not so much. I still don't. I don't go. I'm not like how I was at all.
Has your sexuality changed in its expression and its freedom from the rock and roll days to today?
Has my sexuality changed?
Let me just ask you, meaning how do you see yourself having changed as being that highly charged sexual person back in the rock and roll days to today? Like, who are you today sexually?
Tough question.
Come on. No, it's a great question. Give me the answer. I could hear you saying, what should I say and what shouldn't I say?
No. The truth is, I've always been sexually turned on by things that are taboo and forbidden. Like somebody who I'm not supposed to sleep with, a tutor or my doctor or somebody who's married. I've always been into the forbidden. Or multiple guys, so that has never changed. I'm still like that. But what has changed is that I got bored of certain things, like certain things, and going backstage and having sex with rock bands. The novelty wore off. So it doesn't give me the same kick and excitement because I've done it. I've done everybody. I've been there, done it. And it's kind of like, okay, it's not forbidden anymore. It's really, it's just normal. Let's do something that's really wild and crazy.
So
something I haven't tried before.
You like being on that edge. You like that wild and crazy.
I get bored very easily.
Okay. How much of this lifestyle did your family know? How much didn't they know? And what was the reaction to whatever they did know?
I have family all over the world, and I have some really stupid family members. They are not educated, and they can't understand that a woman can be really sexual and extrovert, but extremely educated as well. The stereotypes to them are that's what life is, categorizing people and stereotyping. So they're like, well, you can't be a university teacher if, you know, you're sexual and you pose for sexy pictures. How is that possible? They're so stupid. So some of them I don't really speak to, and they don't live in England. They live in America or Canada. And my family who live in England, they've been great. They're very intelligent and intellectuals, although they still have a hard time understanding me. I wouldn't say there is the one member of any of my family who has really completely got me or understood where I'm coming from or my sense of humor or the irony that I put into my art.
Well, I am sure that your friends understand you because you don't seem that hard to understand. Let me ask you this question. What is the difference between someone calling themselves a slut or a groupie? What's the difference?
What's the difference between the word sugar and oil? It's just right. Two different things.
Yes. Now, you mentioned before that slut, I want you to redefine that, and I want you to define both words as you understand them.
Well, I don't understand because it's like two different. It's like, what do you mean? The groupie is someone who follows bands.
Okay.
Slut means someone who has sex with lots of different people and is seen negatively.
Correct. And what you're saying is that a slut is not someone who should be seen negatively. It's simply her sexual desire, her sexual...
Well, why is sexual desire bad?
No.
Does it make you a bad human being?
100% I agree with you.
Because, you know, you could be cruel, mean, selfish, lazy. They're all negative traits, personality traits. But why is it having...
Exactly. Here's the answer. The answer is that people like to pick on personality traits that they don't possess and identify them as bad when they refuse to look at themselves and ask themselves, well, how about jealousy being bad? How about greed being bad? Not having a sense of humanity and generosity being bad? So they tend to project on traits that are not part of them, and they say those are bad, and it's quite hypocritical. So that's the answer to your question.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right, and I agree with that. And I think that it's a very schizophrenic world we live in, because whilst we are bombarded with sexualized images of women everywhere, from hair, shampoo adverts to sportswear to everything is sexualized, yet being a sexual woman is negative. So you should be a sexual object in the way your hair is sexy and you're thin and you have nice boobs and you have the right makeup. That's a good thing, but, you know, it's really negative if you become a sexual woman in the sense that you have, just like men, you go in pursuit of sexual activity.
Not because, in Manhattan, Roxana. Not here.
I'm in the wrong country.
Yeah, this is not the way it's perceived here, no.
I think you're talking about Manhattan, but
yes.
if you go to southern states of America...
Oh, 100%. But you know what? Here's the truth. The truth is that underneath all the civility, there is a denial of sexual appetite and desire, so it is really hidden. And it still exists, but when a person has wealth or power, then it's more excused. But it really does boil down to a denial of one's, you know, basic nature. And there's a difference between being sexual and being destructive.
Sure.
But I want to ask a question. In your life, you're how old right now? Or how young?
How young am I? Let's just say I'm in my 30s.
Okay. So I'm going to call you, I'm going to guess that you are 34, 35, somewhere around there, 33, 34.
Let's just leave it at that then, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Have you fallen in love in your lifetime? And if you have, how many times and what made you fall in love?
It's very, I don't know if I have. I feel like I have. But what is love? All those, I'd say I've fallen in love twice in my life. But I just, those, it was with very, very bad men. So was it reciprocated? Yes, it was.
Were they rockers?
Yeah, two of them, yeah. But I wasn't treated very well. And of course, there's a saying that all women love a bad boy. But there goes something deeper than that. I think if you've been treated badly in your life, the male figures in your life have been either sexual abusers or a stepfather that beat you or a father who was a junkie. You're comfortable being around men as partners who resemble that. So unfortunately, I felt familiar with men like that. I've fallen in love with that familiarity, and I've ended up being abused physically by them or whatever. So I've got to know myself through that, and I've had to kind of look into why I fall in love with such characters. And why I get sexually turned on by guys like that. So, and have had to change that about myself.
What did the rock stars think of your book, especially Dizzy?
I don't know Dizzy. I don't really care. He's nothing to me. So whatever he thinks is not relevant to me. I think from having spoken to a lot of other girls who've been involved with him, they've been treated in extremely similar circumstances and similar ways to me. And so it's nothing new. I think so many girls have told me what happened to them with him. I'm shocked that this person continues to do things like that. So I don't really care of such a sort of that individual, what he thinks or doesn't think. Other rock stars, some of them have actually liked it. They've really been happy about it. Some of them asked me why weren't they in it in the book. But I've never actually heard from any specific guy in the book. Like, I mean, no one has emailed me if they've been unhappy with it. No one has actually got in touch with me to say that they've hated it.
I think that what impressed me most about the book is what impresses me most about you, is that there's no phoniness. There's just a transparency. There's just an honesty that is so refreshing. Let me ask you a question. Looking at Iran now, where it is today, have you revisited, have you gone back, and do you think today it's in a worse place than it was after the Shah, before the Shah, or at any time? Like, what's it like for women now?
Well, I went back in 2004 before my book came out, and I had a fantastic time. I went to a few sex parties, and I was great seeing my homeland and the nature and the mountains and just the culture. It was magical. And now it's really much worse than 2004 because of the sanctions. There's a lot of poverty and prices have gone up really high. People are in really dire straits, and I don't know what's going to happen. It's you know, such a bad point right now. It's just sort of what's happening now is that people are actually stealing from one another. Almost like a civil war to get stealing rice or even food, just things like that. It's just people have, there's so much poverty there. And I can't go back to Iran because I'd get killed. So I really hope, I don't know what will happen. I hope something from within Iran happens, some uprising or something. I don't want any other country to interfere and make it another Iraq. But it would be great if something changes for the people of Iran, because it's so bad right now to live in there.
It actually sounds horrible. Obviously, the oil money that Iran has, it would be good if it went towards the people and feeding them and doing what they have to do to make sure that their population is well-educated, well-fed, and treated right. Is the sexual repression the same now as it was?
Everything is oppression. I mean, it's not just sexual oppression. It's human oppression, so that social oppression. I mean, it's just there was a small period when there was the reformist Khatami. He was became the leader temporarily, and he was more liberal, so things were a bit more lax. But now they're imprisoning filmmakers and writers and poets. So it's not just sexual oppression, it's freedom of speech is oppressed. There's no freedom of speech, or there is. It's just so kind of, they're imprisoning. I mean, there was two, three years ago when the students started the Green Movement, the Green Revolution, and there were so many of them killed and imprisoned. So any sign of dissent or any sign of any seed of revolutionary seeds that are planted are immediately erased, you know, because they don't want anything to change the government. So it's actually a really sad time, and I really hope that something does change very soon.
Well, as yourself, I hope something changes, because the people of Iran, as you say, it is an incredibly rich, wonderful culture. And the family life that you grew up in, very few people in America have had that wonderful experience. It just sounds very magical. Tell me about the plans for the rest of your foreseeable life. Do you have a sense of your own destiny, or are you just playing it by ear?
Well, I've nearly finished my second book.
And tell me the name of it.
The Book of You.
The Book of Me. Thank you. I appreciate you writing all about me. I know we just met. Did I impress you that much?
It's all about you, though.
It's all about you.
I'm going to continue to write nonfiction. I don't really like to write fiction. I've tried it, and real life is so much more interesting.
So what's the book about?
It's about it's kind of a follow-up from the first book. But it also touches on a relationship I had with two different men at the same time, which was hidden from one another. One was like a pure, loving, saintly type figure, and one was an evil rocker junkie. and the two lives that I led, you know, with them, and how it kind of came to a conclusion, what happened. But it will have a few rock stars in there. It will have a few funny stories. It will talk a little bit about Iran. And I've also been writing to I'm doing a research, because I'm going to be doing my PhD. I'm doing research on why evil is glamorous in rock and roll, or to some women, why women write to serial killers. I've been writing to the serial killer Richard Ramirez, and trying to understand why he has so many groupies. I don't understand it. I'm trying to understand from these women why they write to him.
I'm going to tell you why I think. What happens is that the assumption that the most people's core fear, Roxana, their deepest fear is to be rejected, not to be accepted, to be embarrassed, pushed away, not being good enough. So when you write to someone who, in your mind, this guy will never reject me because he is the lowest of the low, that there's no fear in the rejection process. Plus, on top of that, it is also the unconscious gravitation towards the bad, which is a part of our human psyche. There's a part of us that gravitates towards the good, and in everybody, there's that nasty little boy and girl.
Right.
So that's my kind of interpretation.
Yeah, that's interesting. But there is so much stuff like in rock and metal about the celebration of evil, death and destruction. I want to find out why it's glamorized. I want to find out also, like, I was in Auschwitz 2 days ago, and I kind of looked at, you know, the sort of, obviously it was horrible being there, but there's also a lot of things like in popular culture, like for example in sexual S&M culture, where Nazi uniforms and Nazi kind of figures are sexualized and in role play, which, fine, yeah, I understand if you're into that, but I'm trying to understand the whole thing about evil and wickedness.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The SS were highly sexualized. There were units that were exclusively homosexual, many, many units, but sexual dominance and sexual pain was absolutely a part of SS culture. So that's one of the reasons why you get, actually, there's more to it than that, but maybe that'll be the title of your third book, and I'll help you with that.
Right. That'd be good. Yeah, I'm just really fascinated by all of it, and just want to find out the appeal of evil in people, especially women, like you were talking about, the serial killers, and sort of why women like that kind of authoritative male figure, like, who is evil.
And there are some women, and the same reason why some women marry junkies and alcoholics,
yeah,
because down deep inside they feel like, I could change this person.
Yeah.
I could save them. I could make the difference in this bad boy and make him a good boy.
Yeah.
So that's also a part of it.
I guess you're right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I should collaborate with you on my book.
You should. Listen, I do you come to the United States?
I do. I go to LA a lot, but I love New York so much.
I want you to come to New York. I want to do a show live and we'll put it together. And I think that my audience and everyone is going to be fascinated by your story. And I look forward to working with you in the future.
It would be really great. Yeah, I mean, I want to come to New York very soon. So I will definitely let you know, and we can work something out together.
Sounds great. Well, listen, it was an amazing pleasure, and I will look forward to speaking and seeing you in New York, and you have an amazing day.
Yes, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting interview, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Me too. Bye. Roxana, I'd like to thank you once again for being on the show with us today. It was a pleasure. It was informative. If you'd like to learn more about Roxana, check out her book, The Last Living Slut, Born in Iran, Bred Backstage, and visit her website, RoxanaShirazi.com. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, and remember, to every problem, there is a solution. I am your problem solver. Please, go to our website, GluckRadio.com. All your friends should be listening in. We have something for everyone. And if you want to sponsor a podcast, if you have an idea, call our office at 212-599-3195. You like us on Facebook. I want you to follow us on Twitter, and I want you to tell all your friends. Till next time.